the outcome of the course of justice is not something that we want to determine, but we're saying here to our friends and allies in the Americas and the United States is that the American government is actually sending cash, money, guns, weaponry, advice, and training to the Mexican military and government forces that are clearly involved in human rights violations. So those of us in America, one of our leverage points is to contact our local federal officials and tell them no more money to things such as the Merida Initiative or any kind of government and police and military funding to Mexico until there's all kinds of accountability for a variety of massacres.
I understand the Merida Initiative is also known as Plan Mexico and is used as the initiative to fight the drug war in Mexico that the U.S. government has funded under that name. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it was a temporary thing, you know, interestingly enough, after around the time of the uprising in Oaxaca. And it was obviously to bolster the Mexican military and police forces to repress social justice movements. It was supposed to only last for a couple of years, $1.5 billion initiative, and so that is officially winding down. But we want to make sure there's no such replication of the horrible Plan Mexico, the horrible Plan Colombia, and the horrible funding of human rights abusing regimes.
Well, and interestingly, it is the Mexican military that's been sent in. The federales have been sent in to Guerrero, where the 43 students have been missing and presumed dead. And they are claiming that it's the local government that's corrupt and connected to drug cartels. And it's the federal government in Mexico that needs to step in to intervene. Do you think that this is an effective response by the Mexican government?
Well, it's understandable that your local populations might find one party less oppressive than the other. And I can't speak for people's affinities down there, but it's the same federal forces that tried to suppress the Zapatista movement, and where are the feds before these things happen? Where is the investigation of corruption before there's an international outcry? It's obvious that the federal government is aware of, if not complicit in, these local crimes against humanity, and so it's it doesn't seem to me like an effective solution.
If people here in our listening area are interested in finding out more and getting involved in this challenge to the Mexican drug war and the paramilitary forces in Mexico that have been funded by the U.S. government, the drug war, again, has resulted in more than 60,000 people killed since 2006, more than 150,000 people displaced. How can people find out more information?
Well, you summed up the crimes very well, and we're trying to work for solutions with Friends of Brad Will. Friendsofbradwill.org is our website, and we have a network of people across North America from the east to the west coast, and it's very easy to get involved at friendsofbradwill.org.
And there is an action page, take action page on that website, friendsofbradwill.org. Again, I've been speaking to Jeff Pelton, who is joining us live from a protest in New York City on the 8th anniversary of the death of Brad Will. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Fall 2014 Portland Debtors Assembly, taking place Thursday, October 30th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Center for Intercultural Organizing in Portland. Participants will learn about the debt system, listen to personal stories on how debt affects our daily lives, connect with groups working to redefine our funding priorities, and organize. Again, that's the Fall 2014 Portland Debtors Assembly, Thursday, October 30th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Center for Intercultural Organizing, 700 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2014 Asada Shakur Solidarity Community Event on Sunday, November 2nd from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Center for Intercultural Organizing at 707 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. This event will have performances and talks from Portland's finest MCs, spoken word artists, and community organizers to reflect on Assata Shakur, former BLA political prisoner now exiled in Cuba. This event is in conjunction with the Jericho Movement's International Day of Solidarity with Assata and all political prisoners. Again, that's the 2014 Assata Shakur Solidarity Community Event, Sunday, November 2nd, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Center for Intercultural Organizing in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to this podcast for the Rhythm Jam, where I'll be in conversation with sought-after trombonist and bandleader Emily Asher. Emily is currently touring the West Coast with two bands, Emily Asher's Garden Party and Endangered Species, and she'll be in Portland for several days over the next 2 weeks. Tune in for full details of venues, dates, exclusive news, and more on this amazing young group of jazz musicians keeping this important music alive. To listen to the Rhythm Jam podcast, go to kbu.fm and search for Rhythm Jam under the Programs tab.
The time is 6:05 and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio. Up next is Labor Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters of Portland, helping to make democracy work with printed and online voters' guides for the November election. You can check your library or voteorgan.org for more information and a guide personalized to your address. Once again, that's voteorgan.org.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. This is your host, Jamie Partridge. Tonight's show comes in two parts. First, a community hearing on the City of Portland fair wage policy organized by Jobs with Justice and 15 Now PDX, which included a crowd of about 100, over 100 people and representation from one city commissioner and the mayor's office, hearing from affected low-wage workers and their allies. The second part of the show is about a rally for Francisco Aguirre, a day laborer organizer who is in sanctuary currently, has been there over a month in refuge, seeking refuge from persecution by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, who seeks to deport him. So first, from the community hearing on the City of Portland's fair wage policy.
This is a community hearing on the City of Portland's fair wage policy. So first I would like to invite commissioners' representatives who are here. Here representing Dan Saltzman is Matt Grum. And here on behalf of Mayor Hales is Jackie Dingfelder. Tim Crail, make it. Yes, I can go now. Tim Crail is going to represent from Amanda Fritz's office, on the side. He's not here yet. So that's okay. And unfortunately, we don't have representatives for Commissioner Fitz, Commissioner Fish, or Commissioner Snowman. So we won't introduce people working. My name is Justin. I'm one of the steering committee members for 15 Now Portland, and we, along with Jobs with Justice, 15 Now PDX, organized this community here. So thank you all for coming and welcome. Just to sort of give a really brief kind of overview of what the 15 Now demand is, it's something that started in 2012 in New York with fast food workers walking out on a day-long strike and demanding $15 an hour minimum wage and union representation. And that demand and those walkouts by fast food workers spread pretty rapidly throughout the country, spreading to places like Chicago, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, Boston, Seattle, pretty much all over the country. And over the last couple of years, they've not only spread from city to city, but they've grown and they've spread to more cities. So where September 4th of this past summer, in over 150 cities, not only in the United States, but around the world, people were walking out, fast food workers were walking out, home care workers joined fast food workers in walking out and demanding 15. And people all over the world in solidarity with those workers held demonstrations to make this demand. Seattle has won 15, SeaTac in Washington has won 15. San Francisco is going to be voting in November and is expected to pass a $15 an hour minimum wage. Hotel workers and school workers in Los Angeles have won a $15 minimum wage. So this is really something that is catching on, and it's something that cities are starting to implement. And so we would want to see that happen here in Portland and throughout the rest of the state of Oregon. So we are going to start tonight with a short presentation from Marty Hart Landsberg. He's an economics professor at Lewis and Clark. And he's just going to basically give us sort of an overview of economic income inequality and why the $15 minimum wage is important to addressing that issue. So Marty.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here with people working to make not only a better fair wage, but a fair economy, an accountable economy. And I think without efforts like the one that's being launched here, we face a very dismal future. We live in a country with an economy that doesn't work very well for the great majority of us. And this has been true for some time, but the trends have intensified over the last 15 years. Beginning in the 1980s, our business and political leaders implemented a series of policies explicitly designed to boost corporate profits and the income and power of those at the top. These policies included, among other things, the promotion of globalization, militarization, financialization, privatization, labor repression, the gutting of public services, and the slashing of corporate and top tax brackets. Unfortunately for us, their success has come at our expense. For example, globalization allowed core companies to shed production in the U.S., contracted firms produced their products using cheaper foreign labor. The strategy boosted corporate profits while simultaneously reducing employment and wages and growth in the U.S. It also reduced corporate needs to invest in new plants and equipment in the U.S., which further slowed growth and employment and wages. Privatization has also worked to boost private profits without helping our economy. Private corporations are increasingly turning our education system and military into new sources of private profit at the public expense. And they are aggressively pushing for the privatization of our postal system and Social Security. Tragically, these policies have created an economy that works very well for an increasingly small share of the population and very poorly for an increasingly large share of the population. To give you an example of just how well those at the top are doing, consider the percentage of all income gains during an economic expansion that goes to the top 1%. During the 1970 to 73 economic expansion, the top 1% got 11% of all the income gains over that expansion. During the 1975 to 79 expansion, it was 25%. Over the 1982 to 90 expansion, it was 45%. From 1991 to 2000, it was 47%. From 2001 to 2007, it was 76%. And in this expansion, the top 1% has got 95% of all the income gains. Now, we know we all do poorly during recession, but now, except for a small percentage of the population, we also do poorly during expansions as well. Our economy is no longer generating enough jobs. Private sector job creation has been incredibly weak. It took until March 2014 for total private sector employment to regain its pre-crisis January 2008 peak. And of course, our labor force was growing over this five-year period. This is also the first expansion in the post-World War II period where public sector employment is actually declining. But our problems are not limited to just insufficient job creation. More broadly, the policies I cited have created a low-wage economy. According to studies by a number of leading labor economists, In the 1980s, job creation was correlated with income. The higher the paying the jobs, the greater the growth in jobs. In the 1990s, we saw the destruction of middle-wage jobs, because job creation was greatest in the higher wage and in the lower wage jobs. But now, in the 2000s, job creation is overwhelmingly concentrated in the lowest paid jobs. David Autor, who's done some of the most important work in this area, now describes our labor market as a downward ramp. It should therefore not be surprising that median household income has declined every year during this expansion. The longer the expansion goes on, the poorer we get. No wonder growth is slow and job creation almost non-existent. So what does all this mean? It means that poor job creation, declining wages, a lack of investment, and slow growth is not hampering profit making. In fact, quite the opposite is true. These negative social trends are what is boosting profits. Thus, while we may see the system is broken, those with power are more than content. It also means that unless we organize and fight to change things, we face a future of ever worsening living and working conditions for an ever-growing majority. The various movements pushing for $15 an hour wage are precisely the kinds of movements we need to support if we're going to succeed in achieving what should be our goal, the creation of a fair and responsive economy. We're here today to express our support and our encouragement for the City of Portland to take an important step in helping us build this fair economy by raising its wage standard. Almost all the economists who have studied the effect of increasing minimum wages have found that the increased wages resulted in higher pay for the targeted workers, reduced turnover and greater productivity at their workplaces, and in many cases, even greater overall employment in the broader economy. And here's just one recent example. 13 states raised their respective minimum wages in 2014. The Economic Policy Institute compared labor market changes from the first half of the first half of 2013 to the first half of 2014 in those 13 states with changes in their minimum wage with the states that made no changes. They found that wage growth for low-income workers was positive in the states that raised the minimum wage, while it was actually negative in the other states. But they also found that both overall employment growth and the decline in unemployment was greater in the states that increased the minimum wage. Thus, all workers benefited, not just the ones that were affected by the increase in the minimum wage. As for the $15 an hour number, here's one way to see how reasonable that demand is. The federal minimum wage is set by Congress and infrequently adjusted. As a result, it is not kept up with inflation. It is currently $7.25 an hour. If we adjust for inflation, the current minimum wage is actually 32% below what it was in 1968. In current dollars, the 1968 minimum wage is actually $10.60 an hour. So the current fair wage standard here in Portland really has just brings us back to roughly 1968 purchasing power. If the 1968 minimum wage grew as fast as U.S. productivity did over the following years, that minimum wage would be $18.30 an hour. In that sense, $15 an hour still means a real loss. In short, while raising Portland's fair labor standard to $15 an hour will not solve all our problems, it is without doubt the economically, socially, and democratically right thing to do. It is entirely appropriate for us to use public policy to help energize and lead the process of defending the interests of our community. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Marty. So next, we are going to hear a short history of the fair wage policy in Portland and why raising the fair wage could be a concrete step forward in challenging and inspiring others to join the movement for a $15 minimum wage. So to do that is Jamie Partridge. He is with 15 Now, and he's with Jobs and Justice, and he was the lead organizer for this event. So welcome to Portland.
So in 1998, 1998, the city of Portland adopted a fair wage policy thanks to a campaign led by Jobs with Justice, which started out at a community hearing similar to this one here at the Musicians Meeting Hall, where we had commissioners from both the county and the city hearing testimony about the need for a living wage policy. And that wage currently for janitors, security guards, parking lot attendants, civic stadium workers, and other workers who work for companies that contract with the city, that wage currently is $10.38 an hour, and with a benefit of $1.92. So is this a living wage in Portland?
No.
Is it enough to pay the rent, food, transportation, food, medical, without government subsidy, without food stamps, without Section 8, without New York government? Should our tax dollars go for poverty wages?
No.
Shouldn't government be a model employer, set the standard for the private sector to follow?
Yeah. Yes.
Should the government pay a fair wage of $15 an hour?
Yes.
So over the years, the fair wage policy has not effectively been monitored or enforced. In fact, the workers' organizing committee sued the city for the parking attendants not being paid the fair wage and obtained back wages for them. A few years back. At the Civic Stadium, the private owner subcontracted some jobs and avoided paying the fair wage. Also at the Civic Stadium, they hired temp workers and avoided paying their fair wage. They denied new hires the fair wage for a number of months. And they paid the state minimum wage and forced the city to subsidize the difference to make up a fair wage. And business workers at the Civic Stadium. So, for these reasons, we're urging the city not only to bump the fair wage up to 15, but to establish a fair wage citizen review board, which would include representatives from labor organizations such as Jobs and Justice and SEIU, which would monitor and help enforce the policy. So tonight we're asking representatives from the mayor's office, from Commissioner Salzman's office, to take our proposed improvements in the fair wage policy back to City Hall. And we have copies of our suggested improvements in the appropriate legalese on their table. And then to get back to the community with a concrete timeline for a city council hearing and for implementation of a $15 fair wage. So, as Justin said, 2 years ago, this fight for 15 was a dream, but Seattle, San Francisco, LA is showing us that it's actually possible. And it's time for 15 now here in Portland.
Yeah.
County workers are demanding 15 in their bargaining. Home care workers are demanding 15. Nursing home workers are demanding 15. Child care workers are demanding 15. This is right here. But because of the state preemption law, how many people have heard of the state preemption law?
About
half. Yeah. So we cannot yet raise the minimum wage for all Portland workers as they did in Seattle for all Seattle workers. But let's start now with the city contracted workers and fight for 15.
That was excerpts from the community hearing on a City of Portland fair wage policy sponsored by Jobs with Justice and 15 Now PDX. We are listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. Next up is a rally for Francisco Aguirre, a day laborer organizer who is in sanctuary in the Augustana Lutheran Church in Northeast Portland and has been there over a month, taking refuge from persecution by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, who seeks to deport him. This rally is outside the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service office, where Francisco was due to have his fingerprints taken in the process of getting a U visa, but that appointment had been summarily and abruptly and without explanation, canceled. So here's the rally and the arrival of the caravan from the church, which did not include Francisco because the appointment had been canceled. So the caravan has arrived from the Augustana Lutheran Church, carrying big banners that say, "As United with Francisco Aguirre and La Migra Separar a las Familias," immigration separates our families.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here and coming out on this rainy day. We really appreciate your presence here. It's really amazing and moving to see all these people gathered here. We are here for slightly different reasons than we had originally planned. As many of you know, Francisco Aguirre, our community leader and father who's been taking sanctuary at Augustana Lutheran Church for over a month now, had an appointment at this building today at 10 a.m. to get his biometrics fingerprinting, which is part of his process to get a U visa. He was gonna be here and we were gonna support him and embrace him. But that appointment got canceled. It was a last minute cancellation, so we don't have any details about why that happened. We decided to go forward with this action because we believe that it's very important that Francisco continues with this process. So there are three reasons why we are here today. The first one is that we want an explanation of why that appointment got canceled. We don't know anything about it, so we want USCIS to tell us why that appointment got canceled. The second reason why we're here, it's because we want them to reschedule that appointment. We want for Francisco to continue with this process, for Francisco and his family to continue with this process that they started a while ago. So we want that appointment to be rescheduled. And the third reason we are here is because we're asking ICE to refrain from interfering with that process. If ICE have anything to do with that cancellation, we ask them to stop. We ask them to let people continue with the processes, that are administrative processes, and we ask them to not interfere with those processes, to let our communities alone, to let our communities in peace. So we are here to demand those three things, and we really appreciate your presence. It's really amazing to see all these people coming together today. It is very important for us to be here. Francisco considered coming today, but he decided not to, because the risks of leaving sanctuary are too great. And he can't take those risks. So we have a few speakers here today who are gonna just introduce us to what we've been doing and reaffirm our demands. So I want to start with Pastor Mark, who is from Augustana Lutheran Church, an incredible supporter of Francisco and immigrant communities in general. So big applause for him.
So there are about 200 supporters here carrying signs, predominantly in Spanish. Francisco no está solo.
We come today in peace, but we come knowing the truth. And we know the truth will set Francisco free. And that is why we are here. We are so glad all of you have turned out. There's been support from the faith communities across this state and across this nation, and support from so many people of goodwill. On Monday, we had Congresswoman Fabian from El Salvador. And the government of El Salvador was calling the church to speak with Francisco and to say the support he has there. So internationally, as well as locally, there are people standing up for what is the truth. Our government cannot hide behind a lie. And we need to know why Francisco was denied his appointment today. If ICE was involved, this violates the trust of every person in this nation. We cannot allow an agency to supersede another agency that is supposed to allow people to go their legal rights to become either citizens or to get their visas. And to confuse those two places distrust in all of us. So today, as people of faith and goodwill, we stand here united, calling for an immediate appointment for Francisco to get his U visa. And we ask our legislators and Congress leaders to stand up as well and call for an expedition of the process. It has now been over a month since Francisco came to Augustana. We are at month number two, and he deserves to be reunited with his family, his children, his wife Dora, and to be able to live freely and could continue to lead in this community as he has led for the last 20 years. That is truth. What is a lie is to say this man does not deserve to be here. He is here. He's part of us. He's our brother, and we want him to have that process now. So as people of faith, may we always, and goodwill, let us always walk with peace and nonviolence, but we know the truth is power than wrong. And that is why we are all here today. So let us continue this process now until he gets his freedom.
That's Pastor Mark Knutson of the Augustana Lutheran Church, where Francisco is in sanctuary.
Thank you very much, Reverend Mark. We have Francisco on the phone, on the speakerphone. We're going to try to have him speak and see if that works. But we have him from the Augustana Lutheran Church.
Francisco, escuchas? A ver, dinos algo.
I would like to thank you, all of you, for being there in my support. I feel you, my biggest moment has been cancer. But let's not take it as a bad news. Let's not take it as another tool of this unjust system that is against our freedom or immigrant people freedom. But we have to be strong and keep fighting. We need to show these people that we are all together on this. And won't give up until we have a good result. I love every one of you. Thank you for your support.
That was Francisco Aguirre speaking to the crowd from. Francisco speaking to the crowd by a speakerphone from the basement of Augustana Lutheran Church.
So my name is Tania Sueta. I work with the National Day Labor Organizing Network. And I wanted to say that Francisco has been an incredibly important part of the fight, not just here, but around the country.